Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, March 13th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Mendocino College builds for the future. Huffman and McGuire help raise almost $20 million for North County Center Phase 2 building. And Ray Hamill with the sports report. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
On Tuesday, March 10th, Congressman Jared Huffman and State Senator Mike McGuire joined Mendocino County leaders to announce a major investment in Mendocino College, a project that will fund an 18,843-square-foot building dedicated to construction, skilled trades, fire technology, and lab service technology programs. Congressman Huffman and Senator McGuire played key roles in securing nearly $20 million in combined state, federal, and local funding for the project. The funding breakdown includes 20% from Proposition 2, 15% from state grants, 15% from federal grants, and 20% from local share. Senator McGuire opened the press conference by thanking leaders who helped push the project forward. He recognized the College Board of Trustees, Board President Noel O'Neill, Trustee Rice, and Trustee Epstein, as well as former sheriff and now Willits Mayor Tom Allman, Councilmember Larry Stransky, and California Conservation Corps Director J.B. Patton. McGuire emphasized that investment is critical for the North Coast, where wildfires have reshaped the region for years. He explained,
"As everyone knows, and we've experienced here in Mendocino County and on the North Coast, we've been on the front lines of the wildfire crisis for years. We've experienced devastating fires here in Mendocino and, of course, also in Sonoma County. So we need a larger, well-trained firefighting workforce. And that need has never been more urgent as we face year-round fire season. We need more firefighters here in Mendocino County, period. And we couldn't be more excited that we're going to be building the newest fire academy on the North Coast right here in Willits."
He also highlighted the need for more housing and the importance of expanding the construction and skilled trades academy, noting that the college's sustainable construction and energy tech programs have seen a 200% increase in enrollment over the past 4 years. He added that the region also faces persistent shortages in healthcare technicians and lab workers, and the expansion will help fill those gaps. Congressman Huffman followed, reflecting on the significance of this moment.
"To be on this coast with all of you, celebrating some good news here for Mendocino College, for this entire county and this community. When you work together, even in a really dysfunctional political climate, you can still get things done."
Mendocino College's superintendent and president, Dr. Tim Karras, spoke next, calling the moment a testament to the strength of rural communities.
"I think this really shows how powerful rural communities are. We all come together for our wins, and this is a big win for both Mendocino College, the city of Willits, and I think our region."
Karras thanked the Board of Trustees, elected officials, instructors, and students, emphasizing the longstanding support the college has received from Congressman Huffman and Senator McGuire, including during the devastating 2017-18 fires. He described the college's 50-year history, serving a 3,200-square-mile rural district, and the critical need for local training in firefighting, emergency services, construction, and skilled trades. He then detailed the nearly decade-long effort to secure funding.
"In 2017, we started applying to the state for funding. Every year, we apply to the state for funding for one project. Every district gets one project to put it in. And we send it in 2017. We scored number one, which I think that is pretty dang fantastic. Number one. You're number one, but there was no money. So that's life. Being in rural areas, you're scrappy. And you're like, well, that's not going to keep us down and defeat us. So we kept applying every year, 2018, 2019, another application, another scoring number one, number one, number one. No funding. Well, all that changed in 2024 with the passage of Prop 2, which was a statewide facility bond for community colleges and K-12. That, all of a sudden, funding became available. Well, we were number one on the list, so that released 50% of the money for this project we're talking about today. So that made it real. The vision no longer is a dream. It's like, oh, this is reality now. So we have to keep hustling, because we're rural. We hustle."
Working with Congressman Huffman, the college secured a $4.2 million federal EDA grant after years of persistence through two administrations. Senator McGuire then added another $4 million through the state budget, bringing outside funding to 80% of the project, an almost unheard-of return for a rural district. With funding in place, the college moved into the design phase for the new 18,000-square-foot facility, which will include CTE labs, general classrooms, a community meeting space, a large outdoor training yard, and a muster station. Construction is expected to begin in the summer of 2027, with students learning in the new building by spring 2029. Ukiah Valley Fire Authority Battalion Chief Justin Buckingham then spoke, thanking Huffman and McGuire and underscoring why the Fire Academy expansion is so critical.
Over the past decade, California has experienced some of the most devastating fire seasons in our state's history. Each year seems to test our communities in new ways. We have seen fires grow larger, move faster, and impact areas that historically were not considered high risk. These events place an enormous demand on the fire service and highlight a simple truth. Our communities need well-trained firefighters, and we need a reliable pipeline to prepare the next generation. That's why a local fire academy at Mendocino College is so important. For rural communities like ours, access to training has long been a barrier. Many people who want to serve in the fire service are forced to travel hours away to attend an academy. For some, that simply is impossible. A local academy has removed that barrier and created a pathway for our own students and residents to train here, earn their certifications here, and begin careers protecting the communities they call home. In fact, in Ukiah, we've already hired four from the last two academies that we've hosted. When firefighters are trained locally, they're far more likely to stay local. They understand our terrain, our weather patterns, and unique challenges we face in Northern California. That connection to the community strengthens our departments and ultimately makes our region safer. The Mendocino College Fire Academy also serves as a regional hub for training. It attracts students from surrounding counties who are looking for an opportunity to enter the fire service. These students bring new perspectives and energy, and many of them ultimately choose to build their careers here in our part of the state. This strengthens the entire regional fire service and helps address the workforce needs that departments across California are facing. This academy represents more than a training program. It represents a long-term investment in community safety, workforce development, and regional resilience. It creates opportunities for local young people to pursue a meaningful career while staying close to the communities that shape them. Programs like this do not happen by accident. They require leadership, partnership, and a shared commitment to the future.
Senator McGuire then introduced Lisa Wiecke Schaffner, CEO of the North Coast Builders Exchange, praising her leadership and her organization's $500,000 investment to expand a construction corps academies into Willits and other Mendocino County high schools, creating a direct pipeline into Mendocino College. Schaffner spoke with humor and heart, reflecting on her unexpected path into workforce development and emphasizing the importance of hope.
The one word that has not been said here, I don't think yet, is hope, because that is what we do.
She praised the Mendocino program and encouraged more industry partners to get involved, saying even one day with students can be transformative. Her message was simple. The trades offer lifelong, high-quality careers, and young people in Mendocino County can build their futures close to home. As the event drew to a close, Senator McGuire stepped back to the microphone with a final message, one that captured the pride, relief, and sense of momentum shared across the room. His closing words summed up what this project means for Willits and for Mendocino County.
This is a good damn day. It is a good day for Mendocino County. It is a good day for the city of Willits. And it is a fantastic day for our economy and for the future of this amazing county that we call home. And this is what Mendocino County is all about. When there is a need, neighbors rally to meet it. We want to say thank you to each and every one of you for your commitment to this college, your commitment to this community. The best days are still to come, and it is because of the hard work of each and every one of you in this room. We're going to end it right here with this. Thank you. Thank you for believing in this college. Thank you for believing in the future of this community. Together, we're building a stronger Mendocino County.
After the presentation, the leaders did an interview. They reflected on what this investment will mean for Mendocino County's future. Congressman Huffman emphasized the central role Mendocino College now plays in shaping the region's workforce.
I think the Senator and I both appreciate the incredible role that community colleges play and Mendocino College for this entire corridor, including here in Willits now, is just a huge part of the future in terms of workforce development and all the good work that those professionals that will be trained in these academies and these classrooms are going to do throughout this county.
Senator McGuire underscored the goal behind the project.
Our number one goal is to create careers close to home in the sectors that we see significant growth. There is great demand for firefighters, not just in Mendocino County, but throughout the North Coast. There is tremendous demand to be able to grow the next generation of contractors and carpenters, electricians, solar installers. There is significant demand from the healthcare industry for lab technicians. There's a huge shortage, and that's what this new building, new facility is going to be all about: growing careers close to home, giving Mendocino County residents the opportunity to be able to earn a living wage in the community that they call home.
College President Dr. Tim Karras said the impact will ripple far beyond the campus.
Well, my feelings are just of absolute joy, because this is just looking at the future for our college and our district that we serve and the communities that we serve. I think this is going to be transformational, especially for the north part of Mendocino County, because you're thinking all the, in this career pathways that students are going to be earning their degrees in, these are all living wage jobs, all local-based jobs. These aren't jobs you can remote in somewhere else. You kind of have to do them here. That means for economic development for our county, these people live here, they have living wage jobs, they might buy homes, they become taxpayers. It just builds our whole county, even the future generations of our county. They'll have kids, they'll go to our local schools. And then also for Willits, right now Willits is our smallest center because it only had one of the two buildings built. Now we're expanding Willits to its fullest capacity. And I think also having hundreds of students coming here to the Willits Center will also enliven our downtown core here of Willits, because people will go to Brick House Coffee down the street, have food. I think it just gives, it truly shows what a community college does. We build our communities. So I'm so excited.
Together, their comments painted a clear picture. This project isn't just a building. It's a long-term investment in the people who will keep Mendocino County strong, skilled, and rooted in the place they call home. And Ray Hamill with the sports report.
The Cal Poly Humboldt men's basketball team has qualified for this year's NCAA playoffs for the first time in 10 years after a good performance at last weekend's conference tournament in Pomona. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Jacks and their breakthrough achievement in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including how the Ferndale girls fared in last weekend's NorCal basketball semifinals, all the latest local college softball and baseball news, including why it was a big week for several former HDNL players now playing for Shasta College, news of one local softball player who has been named State Player of the Week, all the latest high school baseball and softball updates, and news of a big achievement for two local college wrestlers. But first up, the Jacks have qualified for the NCAA postseason in men's basketball for the first time since 2016, after finishing second at last weekend's CCAA tournament in Pomona. After finishing third in the conference standings, the Humboldt men were seeded number 3 for the conference tournament and won their opening two games, beating Cal State San Marcos in the opening round and following that with a victory over Cal State Dominguez Hills in their semifinal. The Jacks then faced unbeaten Cal State East Bay in Saturday night's championship game, but lost 80-63. That, however, was enough to secure the 8 and final seed for this weekend's West Regional Tournament, which will be hosted by East Bay in Hayward. And the Jacks, who are 17-14, will open with a rematch against the Pioneers, who are now 30-0 on the season. That game takes place on Friday night at 7:30. The local high school basketball season, meanwhile, came to an end on Saturday night. For the second straight weekend, the Ferndale girls traveled to Antioch to play Cornerstone Christian in the Division 6 NorCal semifinals, and for the second straight weekend, they fell to the Cougars in a game that got away from them late. Just 1 point separated the two teams after the first, second, and third quarters in what was a competitive game for much of the night. But the top-seeded Cougars would close out strong, outscoring the Cats 23-7 in the fourth quarter on the way to a 46-31 win, 1 week after they also defeated Ferndale in their North Coast section final. The Cats closed out a memorable season 20-11. In local college baseball, it was a good return to the North Coast for six former HDNL players last weekend as Shasta College traveled to Eureka to play College of the Redwoods in a three-game Golden Valley Conference series. The Knights swept all three games, winning 23-5, 10-4, and 6-1. The contingent of local players playing for Shasta include former Fortuna Huskies Daniel Osborne and Rylan Lamori, former Del Norte Warriors Cole Blackburn and Aiden Rice, former Arcata Tiger Will Major, and former Hoopa Warrior Lyle McKinnon. Major is in his second season with the Knights and had his big say in the series sweep, hitting successfully in all three games. The sophomore, who was averaging 257 at the plate, got his weekend started with a couple of base hits in the series opener on Friday. Blackburn and McKinnon both saw time on the mound in Game 3 on Saturday. Blackburn, who was also in his second season at Shasta, got the start on the hill and threw five strong innings for the win, allowing just one run on three hits and a walk and striking out four. McKinnon threw one hitless inning in relief and walked one batter. With the three wins, Shasta improved to 6-1 in the Golden Valley Conference and 8-12 overall, while Sior dropped to 0-8 and 2-19. In local college softball, the Cal Poly Humboldt women return to action this weekend as they get set to open conference play with a four-game series at San Francisco State. The Jacks are 8-11 on the season. The College of the Redwoods softball team had a break in action this week. The Redwoods women will open conference play with a doubleheader at Lassen next Friday. But the Corsairs got some good news during their break in action, with freshman center fielder Grace Turgeon named State Player of the Week this week after a record-breaking performance at Chabot College last week. Turgeon stole 9 bases in a doubleheader sweep over the Gladiators, including a state record tying 6 stolen bases in one of those games. The Ponderosa High School graduate went 7-for-10 for the day while scoring 6 runs and driving in 6 more. She now has 17 stolen bases on the year. The CR women won the two games at Chabot by scores of 21-17 and 14-5, improving to 7-8-1 on the season. In local high school baseball, meanwhile, it was a good opening weekend for the McKinleyville Panthers, who traveled east to compete in the Foothill Tournament and won all three of their games there. The McKinleyville boys opened with a 9-5 win over Red Bluff and followed that with a 15-5 win over Hamilton before closing out tournament play with a 12-4 win over University Prep. The 3-0 Panthers will be back in action on Saturday when they host University Prep in a doubleheader at McKinleyville High School. The Ferndale Wildcats were also in action on Monday. The Cats hosted rival and neighbour Fortuna and won a high-scoring game 17-8 to go to 2-0 in the season. The Ferndale boys will be back in action this weekend at the Maxwell Tournament. In local high school softball, the defending Big 5 champion Del Norte Warriors swept a competitive doubleheader at Eureka, winning 6-5 and 5-3 last weekend. The McKinleyville Panthers also were in action and played 3 games over the weekend. They opened the new season against East Nicholas and lost 9-8 before beating Arroyo 2-0. On Monday, the Panthers hosted South Fork and won 9-2 to go to 2-1. The 1-2 Cubs played 3 early season games against Big 5 schools, beating Arcata 12-10 before falling to Fortuna 10-8 and then traveling to McKinleyville. With their win over South Fork, the Fortuna girls improved to 3-0. And rounding out another busy week in local sports, a couple of College of the Redwoods wrestlers have been honoured for their achievements on the mats and in the classroom. Isaiah Bell and Damian Freitas have both been named to the inaugural CCCAA Men's Scholar All-American team by the National Wrestling Coaches Association. To qualify for the prestigious award, a wrestler must have at least a 3.0 GPA and must have qualified for the state postseason. Bell Bell, a former Arcata Tiger, has a 3.8 GPA and competed in this year's regional tournament, while Freixas, a former Eureka Logger, has a 4.0 GPA and also qualified for this year's regional tournament. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
In national news, Dems blast Iran war as kingly oppression at Senate hearing on military budget. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The topic of the hearing was U.S. military readiness in Europe, but in the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, there was no escaping the elephant in the room, the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. After two generals, one, the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe, testified on readiness and the budget, came the questions and answer period. Republicans like Rick Scott of Florida generally praised U.S. troops and the war.
We respect what the military has done. We support what the military is doing, and we hope they all come back safely. And the goals of this conflict is that they don't have a nuclear weapon. The goals of this conflict, they don't have the ability to have ballistic missiles that are going to kill Americans like they've been doing for decades.
Democrats took a decidedly different perspective. Senator Tammy Duckworth is a Democrat from Illinois.
We're now in the second week of President Trump's illegal war against Iran with no end in sight, and I fear the longer that this war goes on, it will have lasting impacts on the readiness of our military to respond to crises and threats elsewhere. Meanwhile, this administration is hiding its incompetence behind the valor of our military men and women, as if questioning why we're at war is equal to questioning the valor of our troops. We all know that that is not true.
Democrats largely used their time to criticize the war, questioning its cost, its goals, and its legality. Democrat Macy Hirono of Hawaii noted the Pentagon's estimate that the war cost $11 billion in the first week. She also talked about the strike on an elementary school in Iran that killed 175 civilians, mostly children. Preliminary findings point to U.S. responsibility for the strike.
But this tragedy didn't happen in a vacuum. Secretary Hicks said in his misguided attempt to focus on lethality, gutted the office that focuses on mitigating civilian casualties, reducing personnel there from 200 people to less than 40.
Democrat Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan raised concerns over the role of Russia and China supporting Iran. She referred to reports that Russia is helping target U.S. ships and aircraft.
If Russia is helping to kill U.S. forces, we have crossed a Rubicon. We are in another moment, and that we have to take decisive action on that. And instead, we're giving them breaks on oil. They're making a ton of money.
Democrat Tim Kaine of Virginia called the war unnecessary and illegal. He said the Constitution is clear that only Congress can declare war. And he says the founders understood that war is the most kingly of all kingly oppressions.
The president has escalated his use of military to carry out hostilities all over the globe without Congress, while threatening military action against many more nations. We're at war because of the unilateral actions of one man who has grown very confident that Congress will not challenge his kingly behavior.
Senator Angus King of Vermont, an independent who caucuses with Democrats, says there's a clear winner in this war, meaning Vladimir Putin and Russia.
Estimates released a few hours ago are that Russia has reaped $6 billion of benefit from this war since it began just 2 weeks ago. That's about $400 million a day from the increase in oil prices and the easing of sanctions, which is somewhat puzzling to me. So I just think the record should show that the real winner so far is Vladimir Putin to the tune of $6 billion in 2 weeks.
Still, the war continues at a cost Senator Hirono estimates at, by now, close to $20 billion and rising.
So we mourn the deaths of our brave soldiers, but as this war continues, there will be more civilian deaths, there will be more cost to our American families. And I joined all those who pray that this war will end, even if there is really no articulated end in sight.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonio Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new report shows access to nearby nature in the U.S. is not equal, and the gap is closely tied to race and income. Researchers say indigenous communities are among those most affected. The Mountain West News Bureau's Kayla Bradle has more.
Communities of color are three times more likely than white communities to live in places with severe nature loss. Fewer parks, fewer trees, more pollution. That's thanks in part to resource extraction and the rapid development of natural spaces. Researchers say that's significant for tribal areas, where land is closely tied to cultural traditions and food systems. Raina Payan with Justice Outside, which co-produced the report, says losing nearby nature isn't just about scenery.
Nature deprivation isn't just about the aesthetics of who has access to big nature. It's also about who has access to clean air and clean water.
The report also highlights indigenous-led solutions. On the Navajo Nation, local groups are restoring native grasslands and wildlife habitat. In Alaska, native organizations are protecting salmon streams and coastal ecosystems that support subsistence. Researchers say efforts grounded in indigenous stewardship could help close what they call the nation's growing nature gap. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radle.
Reliable high-speed internet is still out of reach for many tribal communities. A new report highlights ongoing barriers to broadband access in Indian country. Daniel Spalding reports.
The report from the Urban Institute says many indigenous communities lack reliable high-speed internet, especially in rural areas. Recent federal investments have helped expand broadband in some tribal communities, but gaps remain. Tommy Reininger is a co-author of the report.
In certain parts of the country, especially in Indian country and a lot of rural communities, folks have a lot less access to high-speed broadband than other parts of the U.S.
The Urban Institute's Gabe Samuel says geography is one of the biggest challenges.
Because of, the historic way where a lot of tribes are relocated, they're often, located in maybe more remote rural areas that are physically harder to access. It's just kind of compounds the challenge to accessing.
Reininger and Samuels both say allowing tribes to manage their own broadband infrastructure will be key to improving access. I'm Daniel Spalding.
American bison are a symbol of the West that might have vanished from the landscape entirely if not for conservation efforts. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the city of Denver donates bison from a long-established herd to tribes and nonprofits each year.
Snow powdered the 34 bison inside a pen while tribes blessed them. 11 went to the Navajo Nation. The rest were sent to the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, a Lakota nonprofit, Buffalo First in South Dakota, and the Denver-based Tall Bull Memorial Council. This keystone species once roamed the Great Plains, but faced the brink of extinction. In 1908, the Denver Zoo had only 18 animals left in captivity, but they would help form a herd near Golden, Colorado. The city has transferred more than 170 buffalo into tribal hands. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
In New York State, more than 900 acres of land is returning to indigenous care. The Six Nations Iroquois Cultural Center, Paul Smith College, the Nature Conservancy, and the Adirondack Land Trust joined in the Land Back Partnership. The Nature Conservancy purchased 600 acres of land for $1.1 million from the college and transferred ownership to the Cultural Center. The Cultural Center will privately own and steward the land. The Land Trust has already transferred 300 acres of adjoining land to the Cultural Center. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Bianna Federico, and thanks to our reporters, Ray Hamill, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.